Coming up this time, special tributes to Cluffy.
The thought we'd ever win the league, it was absolutely just beyond comprehension. So then when Cluffy came in, it just all changed.
He was provocative and fascinating, but he had a clear picture of the way he wanted his teams to play football, which was on the floor, passing the ball with great defence. His teams often won the Fair Play League, and yet they still won trophies.
I went on the internet and I saw the stories, and my heart just sank a bit. I wasn't able to see my great hero and just thank him.
It was a sombre day, and there were many tributes already starting to accumulate by those gates, and in fact scarves tied to the gates and other memorabilia, shirts, etc. So yes, it was a sombre day, but I think it had to be. The way I treated it was as a celebration of how wonderful he'd been, obviously as a football player and manager, and particularly as a manager of my team.
Plus memories of how the first of a trio of statues came about.
We had some of the family on the team, and that was great because they were really strict with the lady doing the sculpture. They were really strict about getting everything accurate. I remember them saying, no, you haven't got the muscles right in the legs. It was really, really interesting.
And when the thunder roared, was it God or was it Brian? An enormously warm welcome to this celebration of the life of Brian Clough.
Hello, I'm Marcus Alton from the tribute website brianclough.com, and in this episode I'll take you back to 2004, when football and the wider world mourned the loss of a remarkable man who touched the lives of thousands of people.
He was the best England manager we never had. I believe he would have done a great job.
It's 7 o'clock, and in the news this morning, the footballing world remembers Brian Clough.
You can probably remember where you were when you heard the news. That's certainly the case for Paul Ellis, who was at work when he realised he'd had a series of missed calls from journalists. He was the chairman of the Nottingham Forest Supporters Club and told me what happened next.
The media needed people to talk to, as you can imagine. So I was at work, and for some reason I didn't notice that my phone had already rung two or three times, and I guess I was in the middle of something and perhaps not able to answer. But eventually, early afternoon, I believe, my wife actually rang me to say, did you know that Brian had passed away, and I think they want to talk to you? So then I looked at my phone and thought, crikey, yes, I've got six missed messages already. So I did ring somebody back, I can't remember who, and they said, well, could you come down to the City Ground? Luckily, I didn't have any other appointments that day, so I said to the team, I'll be gone, I might be back or I might not. Anyway, so I then went off down to the City Ground into the main stand car park, and there were TV vans, radio vans, reporters like I'd never really seen.
Yes, yeah. And you then must have spent a long time just fielding all these media inquiries outside the ground.
Yes, and it happened to be, again, I will not forget, the date he died, because that was actually my wife's birthday. And we were due to go out for a meal in the evening. So, yes, I thought, well, there's still plenty of time, but I just can't believe I must have spoken to every TV company in the UK and beyond, and every radio station from Radio 1, oddly, Radio 2, Radio 4, Radio 5 Live, obviously, Radio Nottingham, obviously, and some of the commercial radio stations as well, and all the TV stations. So, yes, I was probably a media celebrity for that day. But again, you know, I had to think what to say, and I couldn't really talk about him from a personal point of view, but obviously I could appreciate what he'd done for my team.
That's right, yes. And I guess in a way that helped to sort of skirt around the emotional side of it? Because a lot of people were directly upset by it, weren't they? And they brought shirts and floral tributes and things on the day. What was the mood like?
Yes, I mean, very much it was a somber day. And as you say, there were many tributes already starting to accumulate by those gates, and in fact, scarves tied to the gates and other memorabilia, shirts, etc. So yes, it was a somber day, but I think it had to be, and the way I treated it was as a celebration of how wonderful he'd been, obviously as a football player and manager, and particularly as a manager of my team, but also I could relate of how other people had told me what a wonderful person he was. You know, I do know of his help and things living in West Bridgeford. Obviously, he had the his newspaper shop on the West Central Avenue, and obviously he was often there. And people tell me of their wonderful interaction with him. I went in a few times, and he was never there. I mean, oddly, my son also worked in that shop.
Yes.
He can tell me many things, not myself.
Yes, that's Chris, of course, Chris Ellis, and he's appeared on a previous episode where he's told us some stories of working with Cluffy and being rewarded with some chocolate bars and things.
Absolutely, so again, a younger member of my family can tell me many things that I couldn't tell him. So it was just, going back to that day, it was just unreal, really. And yes, I had obviously got, I'm not uncomfortable being interviewed, so I could think of something to say and was probably said most of the same things. But it did go on for 3 or 4 hours. So in the end, I rang my wife and told her to come to the car park, and we went for a meal from there. Where did we go? I don't remember.
Probably it was Trattoria Antonio on Trent Bridge, where Cluffy used to have his Italian meals.
Yes, maybe it was. I can't remember. Yeah, so obviously it's a day I'll never forget.
Yes, definitely. Well, here's a little reminder of that day, because I've found an archive clip of you being interviewed on that day outside the City Ground. It's only very, very short, but have a listen to this.
You now look back and just can't believe it happened. It was so out of what I've been used to. I've been watching Forest for 45 years, so I'd been used to the bad times before that. To actually go through times when you were the best team in Europe was just something you couldn't understand.
There you go. I know it's short but sweet, really, which sort of sums up the impact Cluffy had.
It absolutely sums it up. And as I said then, I'd been watching from 1958 right through to 1975. I mean, the thought we'd ever win the league, it was absolutely just beyond comprehension. So then when Cluffy came in 75, it just all changed.
But not everyone felt able to speak publicly about the news. Such was the shock and emotion swirling around at the time. Cluffy's former defender, Paul Hart, told a previous Green Jumper pod how he heard the sad news.
Well, I received the news from a Sky reporter, and he wanted me to do something then, and I couldn't.
No.
You know, I couldn't do it. You know, he was very nice and very respectful and everything, but I just couldn't, I was shocked.
There were tributes on the front and back pages of the national newspapers. Headlines included "Football Mourns Old Big Ed" and another based on one of Cluffy's quotes, "God better give me his favourite armchair." I've got some more in front of me here, and the Fleet Street journalist Brian Woolnough said, "Behind the cocky, brash, controversial exterior, Clough was a caring diamond, the greatest man-manager of them all, who could transform an ordinary player into a great one." And he goes on to say in this article right at the end, "If there's a football team up there in heaven, they're lucky. Trophies are on the way." Another Clough fan had been hoping to meet his hero at a forthcoming book signing. Kalwinder Singh Dinsa from Derby told me what happened when he heard the devastating news.
It was a week after my birthday, and I think he died a couple of days before him and Archie Gemmell were going to attend a book signing at Waterstones in Derby, and I was planning to go, right? I'd never met Clough before. I'd never met any of the Derby legends before, and I was quite a nervous person back then, a bit shy, and I wanted to meet my hero, Brian Clough. He was actually in Derby for the Freedom of the City in 2003, but I was in Barcelona during that period.
Right.
I missed him, so I was hoping to see him at Waterstones, get my book signed. I mean, I've got so many books on Clough.
Many Cloughy fans can sort of remember what they were doing and where they were on that particular day. Is that the same for you?
Yeah, I was on my computer at home in my little room, and I was just on the internet. These were like the early days of the internet, you know.
Yeah.
Your BBC website. So I was probably doing something else, probably working. But my sister came in. She's like, "Your hero's passed away." I was like, "She goes, Brian Clough." I swear, my heart just dropped. I was like, I was going to see him tomorrow or whenever it was, and I went on the internet and I saw the stories, and my heart just sank a bit. I wasn't able to like see my great hero and just thank him and say, you know, thank you for everything you did at Derby. Thank you. Thank you for lifting our spirits all that time. We had the Rolls-Royce crisis in Derby that nearly destroyed Rolls-Royce air engines and all that. And he kept our people afloat, lifted our spirits, brought us the league championship. And I was never able to, you know, thank him. And from that day on, I think I ended up just buying random stuff off eBay in association with Clough, like programs of his time at Sunderland, his last game against Bury when he, the game that he had his injury.
Yes,
in and so
yes.
On. And I ended up buying, you know, all these things in relation to Clough, badges. And then my father passed away in 2006, and I needed to get back to a point in my life where I was happy, and it reminded me of Clough. And then I ended up reading my good friend's biography of Steve Bloomer. Peter Seddon wrote it, and I was lost in that book for a number of days. I went around the streets of Derby looking at the old houses and all that, and that's what led me on my journey to, you know, try and help families and fans remember their great heroes.
And that determination led to the Clough and Taylor statue at Pride Park. The bronze tribute there followed the unveiling of Cloughy's sculptures in Middlesbrough and Nottingham. In Cloughy's hometown, Robert Nichols was part of the group behind the statue of a young Cloughy walking through Albert Park with his boots slung over his shoulder.
He had some of the family on the team, and that was great because they were really strict with the lady doing the sculpture. They were really strict about getting everything accurate.
Yeah.
I remember them saying, no, you haven't got the muscles right in the legs. He had much... if you go and look at that statue, his socks have rolled down and the calf muscles, they're very sort of Grealish-like, really. But that was the point that they said that they weren't good enough at first. So it was really, really interesting. Only a few weeks ago, I was asked to do a guided tour for some refugees that have come from all over the world, and I thought I'll take them through the park. I'll show them Brian Clough's house and I'll show them a statue. I thought I don't know whether that'll mean anything to them. But they were absolutely fascinated. And that just shows that his name and what he stands for, even to this day, it goes right around the world and it kind of unites people, which is absolutely brilliant.
Meanwhile, in Nottingham, I put together a group of fundraisers who smashed their £60,000 target in 18 months and commissioned the statue unveiled by Mrs. Clough in the city centre in 2008.